Last week we heard how at the great sacrifice held by the demigods, we heard how the sacrifice was disrupted, although it continued to completion, but it was disrupted by daksha. Because, if we remember, when daksha entered the assembly, the sacrificial assembly, when all the great sages, etc., were assembled, Lord Shiva did not stand up to greet him, even though daksha was such a exalted, effulgent, powerful, charismatic personality. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma alone didn't stand up to greet him, but Lord Brahma was the father of daksha, so daksha didn't mind that. But Lord Shiva was the son-in-law of daksha, and the father-in-law's position is far superior, so he expected proper respect from Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva actually is the superior personality, despite the power and the position of daksha. So we'll hear in this following chapter, that daksha had enmity in his heart. And in this chapter we'll hear in the discussion between Lord Shiva and Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva and the daughter of daksha, we'll hear about the tendencies that all human beings have, anarthas, the faults, the qualities, the material qualities that we have within ourselves that tend to stop us from advancing spiritually. Quite interesting, because Sati is going to be speaking, and her position as a simple, actually very young, she's also very young and very innocent and liking social life. And that attachment gets her into trouble. And on the other side, we hear about Daksha's position, how his pride and envy, because this is the difficulty. In the material world, whatever we do, if we do something bad, we get ourselves into trouble, we become attached to it, and it causes us difficulty. If we do something good, we become proud. And then if someone does something better than us, we become envious of them. And these things, these qualities that we possess in the material world are like a web that captures us and binds us so tightly to remaining in the material world. But eventually, as the pastime unfolds, we will hear how to get out of the material world as well. And we'll also hear, and we'll hear about Lord Shiva's consciousness, because his consciousness is above the good and bad of this world, the material qualities of this world. He is fixed in what is called, and we'll hear about it, Vasudev Sattva. Hey, where's your skateboard?
Skateboard?
Yeah.
Grand skateboard.
Oh.
I
saw it. You must have borrowed his hat. Were you a devotee of Lord Shiva previously?
No, but I was a devotee of the big green lizard.
That explains it. Okay. I knew it was one out of the two. It was either Lord Shiva or the great green lizard. Let's see your tongue. Is it forked? Ah, never mind. Forget it. Back to the Bhagavatam. Don't eat flies and bugs, okay?
No, I'm vegetarian.
That's good. So we're going to hear about these, and we'll hear, especially in the we've heard partially already in the case of Daksha, how his pride and envy and anger got him into trouble, and later on we'll even see how much more trouble he gets in the next chapter. But here we'll see how Sati, being a very innocent and attached young lady, how she gets herself into trouble, and that we'll hear the fructification of that in the next chapter. So here we go. Chapter 3, Canto 4, the talks between Lord Shiva and Sati. Maitreya continued. In this manner, this was after the great sacrifice where Daksha cursed Lord Shiva, then the followers of Lord Shiva cursed the followers, the Brahmin followers of Daksha, and then the Brahmin followers of Daksha cursed the followers of Lord Shiva, after the followers of Lord Shiva cursed the Brahmins, yes, and Daksha himself. So it was a disaster in one sense, although the sacrifice did become completed. Maitreya continued, he's narrating this to Vidura. In this manner, the tension between the father-in-law and son-in-law, Daksha and Lord Shiva, continued for a considerably long time. Here is, I'll read the second verse as well. When Lord Brahma appointed Daksha the chief of all the Prajapatis, the progenitors of population, Daksha became very much puffed up. Puffed up means proud. In the early days of the movement, when we'd think of the term puffed up, we'd think of, we'd roll a chapati. And then you put the chapati on the flame, and then it triples in size, it gets big and round, it was previously thin, and then it gets filled up, puffed up completely with air, but it's only hot air. There's nothing in there, actually. There's no substance to it. So practically speaking, no one has anything to be proud of in this world, because we are tiny, we are insignificant, the world is great, it grinds, time crushes everything, and whatever abilities we have, we will lose in time. Whatever beauty we have, we will lose in time. Whatever wealth, intelligence we have, everything will be taken from us. Everything has been given to us, and everything will be taken from us. So what is there for us to be proud of? But yet, as soon as we get some position or ability, pride comes to the heart, and we think we are better than others, even though in fact we are one in billions. One in billions. Insignificant. So, as soon as Daksha had a position, he became puffed up, he became proud. Here's what Prabhupada explains in the purports to these first two verses. The previous chapter has already explained the Vidura question the sage Maitreya as to the cause of the misunderstanding between Lord Shiva and Daksha. Another question is why the strife between Daksha and his son-in-law caused Sati to destroy her body, because Sati ends up killing herself, committing suicide. The chief reason for Sati's giving up her body was that her father, Daksha, began another sacrificial performance to which Lord Shiva was not invited at all. Generally, when any sacrifice is performed, although each and every sacrifice is intended to pacify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the Lord, everything, all sacrifice, Jagavai Vishnu, is meant to satisfy the Lord. But still, all the demigods, especially Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and the other principal demigods, such as Indra and Chandra, they are invited and they take part. It is said that unless all the demigods are present, no sacrifice is complete. But in the tension between father-in-law and son-in-law, Daksha began another yajna performance to which Lord Shiva was not invited. Daksha was the chief progenitor employed by Lord Brahma, and he was a son of Brahma, so he had a high position and was also very proud. So this is the great danger of a position. The great danger. Because as soon as one takes some position, what tends to happen? Pride enters the heart and one thinks one is better. But in Kali Yuga, in this age of quarrel in which we live in, it is not only the people who have positions are proud and think they can do anything. Everyone is proud. It is said, even a pauper is proud of his penny. That means if we have more or less nothing, we still become very proud of it and think that we know more and are better than others, and of course we can't listen to anyone. So Daksha had something. He was very powerful, responsible position, but he became proud. But at least he had a reason to be proud. He was doing something. But we, contrarily, become proud with nothing. And actually that pride generally is just to counteract all the miserable feelings we have in the heart and all the insecurities and the neuroses and all the difficulties and the pain. And it's basically just bluff. The second purport, very short. Although he was envious, because when one's proud, then what happens, that he has something. Then there's always, no matter what we have, whatever it is, there's always someone who has more than us. Someone will have more than us. And then, because that pride is trying to, it's a statement how great we are. Actually, it's based on envy of Krishna, because whatever we have comes from Krishna, and whatever we have is ultimately very insignificant. So, whenever someone has something more than we have, that pride will turn into matsarja, or envy. Jealousy. We cannot stand to see someone having more than us, and ultimately we want to push them down. So, although he was envious and was inimical to Lord Shiva, Daksha was appointed the chief of all the Prajapatis. Prajapati means the one who, the progenitors of the population, of the Praja, the Pati, the protector. This was the cause of his excessive pride. He has had a position. When a man becomes too proud of his material possessions, he can perform any disastrous act. And therefore, Daksha acted out of false prestige. That is described in this chapter. So Daksha began another sacrifice. Daksha began a sacrifice. This is text 3. Ishra sa bhajapayena. He began a sacrifice named bhajapay. And he became excessively confident of his support by Lord Brahma. He then performed another great sacrifice named Brihaspati Sav. Here's Prabhupada's purport to this. So Daksha wanted to increase his position in performing sacrifices, but he didn't invite Lord Shiva. In the Vedas, it is prescribed that before performing a Brihaspati Sava sacrifice, one should perform the sacrifice named Bhajabhai. While performing these sacrifices, however, Daksha neglected great devotees like Lord Shiva. According to Vedic scriptures, the demigods are eligible to participate in yajñas and share the oblations. But Daksha wanted to avoid them. All sacrifices are intended to pacify Lord Vishnu. But Lord Vishnu includes all his devotees. Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other demigods are all obedient servants of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Lord Vishnu is never satisfied without them. But Daksha, being puffed up with his power, he wanted to deprive Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva of participation in the sacrifice. Understanding that if one sacrifice satisfies Vishnu, it is not necessary to satisfy his followers. But that is not the process. Vishnu wants his followers to be satisfied first. The Lord says, Lord Krishna says, Mad bhakta puja vyadika. The worship of my devotees is better than worship of me. Similarly, in the Shiva Purana, it is stated that the best mode of worship is to offer oblations to Vishnu. But better than that is to worship the devotees of Krishna. The best kind of worship, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. The best kind of worship is to worship Vishnu. But better than the best is to worship the devotees of Vishnu. Thus, Daksha's determination to neglect Lord Shiva in the sacrifice was not fitting. He did not know, actually. He was a devotee, in a sense, a devotee of Vishnu. And he did not know how to actually satisfy Vishnu. So while the sacrifice was being performed, many Brahma Rishis, great sages, ancestral demigods and other demigods, their wives, all very nicely decorated with ornaments, attended from different parts of the universe. So in the Vedic culture, there's a mixture between the social and the spiritual, because the social life that everyone needs a social life, it should be made parallel with spiritual advancement. Now, naturally, people have their social life, and generally speaking, it's very much in the mode of ignorance. It has to do with intoxication. Anything that is pure and clean, it is just the opposite of people's social life. And therefore, because everyone does need social life, their social activities ultimately degrade them. Because it's in the mode of ignorance, and ignorance produces madness, intoxication, inability to do anything, uncleanliness, ungodliness, and further and deeper ignorance. And on the other hand, goodness, sarvam sanjayate jnanam, that goodness produces knowledge, detachment, peacefulness. So, these activities, the spiritual activities, and even the social life, should be also in the mode of goodness, so that people become elevated even by their social activities. So, spiritual and social should go hand in hand, but social is not spiritual. In other words, if one participates in a spiritual function for social reasons, that is better than participating in an ignorant, degraded type of social function, and gradually one will become elevated, and then when one becomes elevated or purified, one realizes there's more to be gained than just the social benefit. Because ultimately, what's to be gained from spiritual life is prema pamartho mahan. We should learn to love Krishna, and we should go to Krishna. We should leave the social life of the material world and every other type of life in the material world, and we should attain the spiritual world, go there eternally. But yet, while we need social life, we do need it. We need it. We can't avoid it. We're social by nature. And unless we make friendship with the devotees and socialize with devotees, we will make friendship with non-devotees and socialize with them, and then the result will be that there'll be an interchange of desires. So other types of desires will be assimilated and entered in the heart. So when this sacrifice, which was, there was a spiritual purpose, because again, Jagyavai Vishnu, sacrifices are meant to satisfy Vishnu, but there's a social function there, and everyone comes, and everyone puts on their best clothes, their finest silk and the ornaments, etc., and dresses themselves very nicely, and looks forward to seeing their friends, and talking about this, and talking about that. So Sati, she saw this. She saw that all the her relatives and all the socialites of the world the demigoddesses, whatever, all the anyone who was anyone was attending the sacrifice, she naturally felt left out and she wanted to go. So the chaste, this is text 7, the chaste lady Sati, the daughter of Daksha, especially was held by her father. So how could she resist? She was very, very young, actually, too. She was, practically speaking, a teenager. So her father was holding a big sacrifice, a party, a big get-together, and she wanted to go. So she saw from all directions the beautiful wives of the heavenly denizens, their eyes beautifully glittering, were near her residence and were going to the sacrifice dressed in fine clothing and ornamented with earrings and necklaces and lockets. She approached her husband, the master of the Buddhas, in great anxiety and spoke as follows. Sati said, so in text 8-14, Sati is going to speak to Lord Shiva now and beg him and ask him indirectly if she can go and attend. Sati said, "My dear Lord Shiva, your father-in-law is now executing great sacrifices." So this is the Vedic culture, very polite and indirect. She didn't say "my father" because she wanted to remind him, Lord Shiva, of his relationship with him too. So by saying "my father-in-law," automatically it's included that it's my father. So, and also you have a relationship with him and he's your father-in-law. "So my dear Lord Shiva, your father-in-law is now executing great sacrifices," very polite, "and all the demigods, having been invited by him, are going there. If you desire, we may go also." But really what was in her mind, she wanted to go. "I think that all my sisters must have gone to this great sacrificial ceremony with their husbands just to see their relatives. I also desire to decorate with myself with the ornaments given to me by my father and go there with you to participate in that assembly." So what is the use of having so many fancy silk saris and gold ornaments and everything if you never get a chance to use them? So she wanted to go. She wanted to be with her friends and her family members. Here's Prabhupada's purport. "It is a woman's nature to want to decorate herself with ornaments and nice dresses and accompany her husband to social functions, meet friends and relatives, and enjoy life in that way." So it's everyone's nature. "This propensity is not unusual, for woman is the basic principle of material enjoyment. Therefore, in Sanskrit, the word for woman is stri, which means one who expands the field of material enjoyment. In the material world, there is an attraction between woman and man. This is the arrangement of conditional life. A woman attracts a man, and in that way, the scope of material activities involving house, wealth, children, and friendship increases. And thus, instead of decreasing one's material demands, one becomes entangled in material enjoyment." So here's a basic principle. The basic principle is that our life is not meant to increase our material desires. Why? The basic reason is that the more material desires we have, rather than being satisfied, the less satisfied we become. And material desires, they burn like fire. The more fuel that is added, the more we attempt to satisfy our desires, the bigger the fire of our desires grows. Practically speaking, it is just like a fire, as the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes. Kama, desire, is like a fire. And the more fuel that is put onto a fire, it may start with just a spark one simple desire. But that fox, that spark, if fuel is put on it, or if the desires are tried to satisfy it, if attention is given to it, even attention, if we have a desire, and desires go through our mind all day long, I want this, I want that, I don't want that, desiring all day long, if we give attention to those desires, we see immediately they blossom. The nature of desire. So therefore, the way to deal with desire is twofold. But basically, we try to use our desires in Krishna service, because we cannot obliterate desires. It's impossible. It's the nature of the soul. But we try to neglect them as much as practical. Not as much as possible, but as much as practical for us as individuals. We try to live as simply as possible, as we are able to comfortably. Live simply and not be under the illusion that accumulation of all the things that fill our mind will satisfy us. So therefore, the tendency is to not neglect our material desires, but to fan those sparks and have them increase. And thus we become entangled. Because the way that it works, as soon as we put attention to it, it turns into two and three. Because to satisfy that one desire, we need three other things. And to satisfy that, those three other things, to get those, we have to do 10 other things. And even if we had all 1 and 3 and 10 and 500, still we wouldn't be happy, because we are souls, we are eternal, we are spiritual, we just simply don't belong in the material world. It's practically, the material world is a different substance. So in this way, one becomes entangled by trying to increase one's material situation. I mean, one becomes entangled in material enjoyment, but never satisfied. So Prabhupada's purport continues. Lord Shiva, however, is different. Therefore his name is Shiva. Shiva means auspicious. He is not at all attracted by material enjoyment. Although his wife Sati was the daughter of a great, very great leader, and was given to him by the request of Brahma. Lord Shiva was reluctant, but Sati, as a woman, the daughter of a king, wanted enjoyment. She wanted to go to her father's house, just as her other sisters might have done, and meet them and enjoy social life. Innocent, but still entangling. Here she specifically indicated that she would decorate herself with the ornaments given to her by her father. She did not say that she would decorate herself with the ornaments given by her husband, because her husband was callous about all such matters. He did not know how to decorate his wife and take part in social life, because he was always in ecstasy with thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he was on a different level of enjoyment. And practically speaking, actually speaking, it is far superior to be on that level. When we see a very wealthy person, or a very beautiful person, or a very famous person, and here we are, just ordinary old folks, We think, oh, they're on a different level of enjoyment. And actually they are. If you've ever been into a very, very, very wealthy person's house, it's just on a complete, it's covered in marble or something like that, and there's gold filigree and staircases and up and down and elevators and servants and this and that, and they just live, very, very wealthy people just live on a completely different level. They enjoy on a different level. But their level of enjoyment, as opposed to our common level of enjoyment, or similar to our level of enjoyment, isn't satisfying to the soul. But the highest level of enjoyment is the level of enjoyment that the soul is actually enjoying. And that level of enjoyment is when there is purity of heart in the service of God. Krishna. So Lord Shiva was on that level, and because he was on that level, that highest level, he neglected all the lesser levels to the consternation of his wife, who was not on that level at this particular point. So he did not know how to decorate his wife and take such part in social life, because he was always in ecstasy with thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the Vedic system, a daughter is given a sufficient dowry at the time of her marriage, and therefore Sati was also given a dowry by her father, and ornaments were included. It is also the custom that the husband gives some ornaments, but here it is particularly mentioned that her husband, being materially almost nothing, could not do so. Therefore she wanted to decorate herself with the ornaments given by her father. So Lord Shiva is so powerful, actually, and also Sati herself is so powerful, actually. But yet, Lord Shiva keeps himself so, living so simply. He doesn't own a house. He doesn't live in a house. Just simply, but satisfied. Satisfied, because his thoughts are enwrapped in loving thoughts about Krishna. But Sati wanted to go to the sacrifice. So she said, "My sisters, my mother's sisters and their husbands and other affectionate relatives must be assembled there." Because this is the way it works. When we have a plan of enjoyment, or if there's a spark in our heart of trying to enjoy something, what fans that spark more than anyone else, anything else, is when you see others doing that thing. If you see that others are doing it, immediately you want to do it too. Me too. I want to do it. So there is some envy in that, actually. But that is how, by association, really. By association, one picks up the desires of others. So just by thinking that her family was going to be there, and all the sisters and sister-in-laws and all the people she loved to talk to, she wanted to go. It's natural. "So I shall go. If I go, I'll be able to see them, and I shall be able to see the flapping flags and the performance of the sacrifices by the great sages. For these reasons, my dear husband, I'm very anxious to go." This manifested cosmos is a wonderful creation of the interactions of the three modes of material nature, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. In other words, this whole universe, when we think about our enjoyment, we want to do something. Then you look up in the sky at night and see thousands and thousands of stars up in the sky, and suddenly our big desire that we had, that was overwhelming us, seems so insignificant and petty. So when someone is aware of the cosmos, of the universe, and how the universe is created by the external energy, by Krishna's external energy, and the Lord, this is just one of the energies of the Lord, and one's mind is focused on the Supreme, like Lord Shiva's is. So she's describing, "I know this is there, this truth is fully known to you, yet I'm just a poor woman, and as you know, I'm just a child. I'm not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I'm not on that level of being able to see in the spiritual way, and I want to see my birthplace once more. I want to go." Srila Prabhupada's purport. Dakshayani Sati knew very well that her husband Lord Shiva was not very much interested in the glaring manifestation of the material world, which is caused by the interaction of the three modes of material nature. It's like a magician's show. It's a trick. It is there only for a short time. It fades, it comes, it goes. It is not actually the substance that will satisfy us. It is a will of the wisp. It's an illusion. So therefore, Sati knew this, knew that Lord Shiva was on that level of seeing this world for what it was. Therefore, she addressed her husband as Aja, which refers to one who has transcended the bondage of birth and death. Just imagine how life would be different if we were never to die and never to grow old, never to get diseased. We would live forever. Now, this is the platform that we actually exist on, the platform of the soul. But to become on that platform, to get on that platform, we have to transcend the material nature. So Sati knew that her husband was transcendental to the bondage of birth and death and had attained his eternal position. She stated, "The illusion of accepting the perverted reflection, the material or cosmic manifestation to be real, is not present in you because you are self-realized. For you, the attraction of social life and the consideration that someone is father, someone is mother, someone is sister, which are all illusory relationships, is already over. But because I'm a poor woman, I'm not so advanced in transcendental realization. Therefore, naturally, these appear to me as real. Only less intelligent persons accept this perverted reflection of the spiritual world to be real." So, is it Sati who is just being foolish, or is it ourselves? Do we accept the material world and we try to possess it as if by having some part of it and thinking that it is ours, although it is doomed to be ours, it will not last as ours, time will steal it away. We think that these something or another will make us happy. So this is our less intelligence. Accept this perverted reflection of the spiritual world to be real. It is a pervert. We're after the substance, not the reflection. This material world is attractive because it is a reflection of the actual object of Golok Vrindavan, of the spiritual world. And when we meet someone and we become attracted to them, to be with them on a material level, practically speaking, we're seeing a reflection of Krishna, or a reflection of Krishna's the persons who are with Krishna in the spiritual world. And that reflecting is done by the illusory energy of Maya. That is what Maya does. Although there is no possibility of doing that. And you meet someone for the first time and you fall in love and you think, oh, it's going to be so wonderful. And then after a few times, the glitter is gone. And you see what they're really like. So that means, and it's the same with you, them seeing you too. So that means we're imagining it's going to be like this. And that potency to make us, illusion us, to bewilder us. This is the modes of material nature. Bewildering us into thinking that we will be, that making something appear as it is not, making it seem as if it's wonderful, but it only remains with that glitter for such a short time, and then it becomes very tasteless. We spit it out, practically. And this is what's going on in the dealings between the men and the women, etc., etc., of this world. Dreaming, imagining. And then it becomes bitter and then changing and thinking, oh, this one will make me happy. Be the one I am looking for, my soulmate. But we're not acting as souls. We're actually thinking in terms of body mates or mind mates are intellectually compatible. But soul mate means on the eternal level. who we are compatible with on the eternal level, on the soul level, on our, who we really are. That takes very deep spiritual realization to know. So they know, those who are under the spell of the external energy of Maya accept this manifestation to be fact. So it's very intelligent to be cynical about possible enjoyment in the material world. But that doesn't mean cynical about true enjoyment on the soul level. No, very optimistic about that. Actual reality is elsewhere in the spiritual world, but Sati says, but as far as I'm concerned, I do not have much knowledge about self-realization. I am poor because I do not know the actual facts. I'm attracted by my birthplace and I want to see it. One who has attraction for his birthplace, for his body, and for other such items mentioned in the Bhagavatam is considered to be like an ass, a donkey, or a cow. So this is our position. We have attraction for the body and we think we'll be able to enjoy. So this is unfortunate. Text 12. O never-born, Abhava, O blue-throated one, Sati has continued talking to Lord Shiva. Not only are my relatives, but also women, other women, dressed in nice clothes and decorated with ornaments, are going there with their husbands and friends. Just see how their flocks of white aeroplanes have made the entire sky very beautiful. From Prabhupada's purport. When Lord Shiva is addressed here as Abhava, this may be taken to mean one who has never felt material miseries. Sati wanted to impress upon her husband that even those who were not related to her father were also going, to say nothing of herself, who was intimately related with him. Lord Shiva is addressed here as blue-throated. Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison and kept it in his throat. So this will be related, this pastime, and related in the eighth canto. And he drank that ocean of poison, kept it in his throat, not swallowing it or allowing it to go down to his stomach. And thus his throat became blue. Since then he has been known as Nilakanta, or blue-throated. The reason that Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison was for others' benefit. When the ocean was churned by the demigods and demons, the churning at first produced poison. So because the poisonous ocean might have affected others who are not so advanced, Lord Shiva drank all the ocean water. In other words, he could drink such a great amount of poison for others' benefit. And now, since his wife was personally requesting him to go to her father's house, even if he did not wish to give that permission, he should do so out of his great kindness. She continued, O best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place in her father's house? Even though you may be considering that I have not been invited, there is no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master, or father without invitation. O immortal Shiva, please be kind to me and fulfill my desire. You have accepted me as half of your body, your wife. Therefore, please show kindness towards me and accept my request. So the Sati made her appealed to Lord Shiva. And then I think we'll hear Lord Shiva's reply tomorrow. So thank you. Any questions or comments?
You wanted to pray Lord Brahman, Lord Shiva, sorry, Daksha, He wanted to pray about Lord Brahman, Lord Shiva also.
Who he wanted to
deprive
them. But really Lord Shiva. That's what's explained a little later. But ultimately when one has pride and envy, one wants to deprive everyone. One wants to be in the sole possessor of the top position. So this is always something that we always have to be careful of. To be so careful of, that means consciously aware when these thoughts, these emotions, desires, the pride and the envy come to our heart. Painfully aware, but aware. And then what do we do? So when one is that, why must, at least theoretically, or actual devotees, why are devotees humble? By definition, a devotee is humble. Why? Because a devotee is determined to act in a very pure way. So he's fighting against these tendencies which are arising in his heart. He sees himself getting envious. He sees himself becoming proud. He sees himself becoming greedy. He sees himself lust entering his heart. And he doesn't want these things there. Krishna, I can't have any of these things in my heart, so I want to serve Krishna. I'm trying to be a devotee of Krishna. And I'm trying to do this, so I'm not going to keep these things. And then he sees how many times, every day, every hour, that his heart becomes contaminated, polluted by all these desires. So therefore, because of his struggle, the commitment to purity, he's humble. This is a real devotee because he's committed to purity. He's humble. He's committed to the fight. He's committed to the fight. And if we don't become committed to the fight, the struggle to be pure, then we will never become humble for this reason. And on the other hand, non-devotees, they're fully surrendered to not fighting because they're thinking naturally that I'm not talking about, just people in general. They surrender to the lust, the anger, the greed, the desires, the intoxications of life. And therefore they'll naturally, on one level, be in less anxiety because they're not fighting. They have no commitment. It's a purity. But the result of that, of their peaceful gliding, is a gliding downward. Because of surrendering to lust, anger, greed, basically things produced of the mode of ignorance. And the result of the mode of ignorance is further degradation. So what gives the devotee hope? Because it's a fight, and how long can you go on fighting for? I mean, you can fight for a little while, and you can be humble, but it's his taking shelter of Krishna and dependence on Krishna. And the hope and the shelter of Krishna and the process of chanting Krishna's names and wherein one feels the shelter of Krishna that gives him strength and purifies him to go on. And he sees his own inability to purify himself. That's the humility. And therefore he becomes able to take shelter. Then kirtaniya sadhari. Nam namakari bhudaniva savajaktis. Tatapita niyamitas mananena kala. Itadasi. Tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivam. He sees his unfortunateness. And he sees his main unfortunateness that I have all these bad qualities, and the very thing that will purify me, chanting Krishna's names, I have no attraction for that. So how unfortunate I am. So that awareness of one's misfortune actually brings fortune to oneself. So it's just the opposite of the religious devotional way of thinking is quite opposite, contrary to the way a materialist is thinking, that a materialistic person, he's feeling Krishna by the grace of God, he's feeling so unconfident and his self-esteem is down because he's seeing all so many things. He's awake to how that he's insignificant, basically. But he doesn't like that feeling. And a devotee, and it's not that it ever feels good, but a devotee knows how to use that for his advantage. But a non-devotee, rather, he would take shelter of illusion. This isn't... The ultimate one is... one time I saw one, the ultimate self-help book. I must have mentioned this at one time or another. And it said, it was so wild actually. It said that how this person, he was poor and everything, and then he figured out the way of success, and it's just three words. And it went on through a whole book, they stretched it out through. And you try and say, what are those three words? And if you just know this and fully believe this, then you'll become fully successful. And you're looking through the whole book. What is it? What is it? What is it? You are God. Oh, come on. Give me a break. You are God. If you only will know that, you'll be successful. Your self-esteem will grow up, really. And you have full self-confidence because you're God. But how much illusion do you have to be in to think that you're the supreme? But somehow or another, it slipped your mind. Oh, I knew there was something. If it was on the tip of my tongue, what was it again? Just imagine. I'm supposed to be making the sunrise. Oh no, I forgot. Oh no. I forgot. I'm God and I forgot. Oh, sorry about that. Anyway, I'd have to say that was the most ridiculous book I've ever seen in my life. Yeah.
Because it's like very hard to live in a struggle continuously. And the ultimate solution, you may know, but it's like somewhere way off, very high, full surrender. So then it would seem like an option is to like create the parameters where you can peacefully glide as a devotee.
Yeah. You don't mean...
That seems to be like...
a good option. But we also note that no one can do it, because the very nature of making some commitment to Krishna doesn't let you peacefully glide. And not only that, the material world doesn't either. No one can peacefully glide, because eventually, you know, your kidney fails you, or your wife divorces you, or your kids become devils. What did that lady say? Tina's talking to someone on the phone. She said, what was her line about the devils?
Tame these devils.
I have to tame these devils. She's talking about her kids. What are the kids thinking?
There's a telephone.
They're thinking, when's she going to get out of here so we can have some fun? So the very nature of the material world doesn't allow us to glide. There is padam padam yabhi padam. There's danger at every step. We have a plan to glide, and that's basically what everyone is doing, whether the tendency may be there for materialists, etc., or devotees. But the very nature of the material world, there are obstacles, always. Suddenly your life gets turned upside down when you least expect it. Then where is the gliding? Then you're confronted with this heavy thing, and you realize your position. How, and you know, we laugh, you know, let's see, Prabhupada will say something about foolish sati or foolish, and then we realize that it's us. And then what do you do? And then we're laughing at others, and then we realize that we're worse. And then you have to swallow that pride. And no matter how many times you swallow it, you never quite get used to the taste of it. It doesn't taste very good. But that's the price. Because in that state, you can call out to Krishna for help. And then Krishna will always be there in proportion to the sincerity and the fullness of heart that we call out to him. This is the nature of religion. Can't glide here. We're in the wrong place. Try to glide and we'll hang. You can't hang glide. And you can maybe for so long, and that just builds up your confidence, and then when the plane crashes, it's even worse. And there's no one survives. How can one cruise when your death is just around the corner, either today or tomorrow or the next day? So, and on that level, you know, we may not want to struggle, but. And you're right, though, that no one likes to continuously do it. But we have things that help us also in it, like chanting Krishna's names and good association with devotees and the Bhagavatam and the deities and the Dham. These five potent items are very powerful. Sadhyam bhava janmaye. If we don't commit offenses and we're intelligent, they will help us give birth to bhava, to love. Shraddha dure yasta panchike. That even if we don't have faith in them, they're so powerful. And salpasya be some that even if we have just a slight connection with them, so they'll give us strength to go on. And ultimately there's so much more of a taste in the spiritual than the material. So param dispanavartate, that's the ultimate, the draw. On one side there's the material world kicking, and on the other pushing and not allowing us to be comfortable. And then on the other side is the spiritual world, the sweetness and the shelter of Golok Vrindavan pulling us. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So we'll continue tomorrow with the reply of Lord Shiva to childish sati, childlike sati.